This is the Chochmat Nashim podcast on JewishCoffeeHouse.com, because Judaism is better when women are heard. Now, here are Rachel Stomel, Ann Gordon, and Shoshana Keats-Jaskol.
Welcome to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Shoshana Keats-Jaskol.
I'm Rachel Stomel.
And I'm Ann Gordon.
And we're going to do something slightly different this time because I have a bee in my bonnet, to use a very old phrase. I've been dealing with a topic that we actually talk a lot about, but it's come up again. And I'm going to introduce the issue, and then we're going to have it out because we do not all agree on this issue. Recently in the news, two different seemingly unrelated issues came up, and I saw them immediately as related, given my perspective. The first is that a man on an LL flight refused to sit next to a woman and held the flight up for over an hour as they tried to find him a seat not next to a woman. The second is a Chabad-run event in Kikar Rabin in the heart of Tel Aviv, which is having segregated seating. And it was in the news because while they were initially given a permit to do the event, the mayor tried to then revoke that permit because of the segregated seating. There were people who protested the idea of an event being segregated in the heart of Tel Aviv out in the public sphere. So I see these two as related, and I'm thinking so much about this desire and acceptance of wanting a woman free space. And this conversation has been raging on my Facebook wall for the past few days. And people who I normally get, you know, who I agree with or are not agreeing with me, people who don't normally agree with me are agreeing with me. And I'm actually quite upset about it. So I really want to talk about it. So this is how I feel. And then I'm going to ask you guys how you feel. I feel that the more we allow for gender segregated events that are outside of a closed religious institution, like a synagogue, like a school, where people who pay dues or they pay membership and they know what they're getting into, the moment we take them out and we enforce this gender segregation, we are making an expectation and an acceptance for gender segregation. And inevitably, when you have a segregation, the women get the smaller, the poorer visibility, the less air conditioning. I mean, you know, Srili Besser actually wrote an entire article about this in Mishpacha magazine where he praised the Eishes Chayils for their acceptance of, you know, basically
the shorter end of the stick,
you know, the poorer conditions and how amazing they are and how get me out of this mechitza room right now. I feel very strongly that having gender segregation outside of areas like I just described is something that leads to this kind of thing where the man on the LL flight just assumes that it's his right not to be next to a woman. It's his right not to have, not to sit next to a woman. And I really strongly stand against any gender segregation that's outside of these enclosed spaces.
What's interesting about that is also that when a man feels, or when anyone feels, that the environment is supposed to be a certain way and then it's not like that, he feels like he is the one who's the victim here. Because if he assumes that he is entitled to a woman-free space and he sits down there and he's told no, he feels slighted. He feels like he's the one who's getting the shorter end of the stick, which is pretty ironic considering, you know, when you think about it from the outside, that women are being discriminated against and it's the men who are getting up in arms that this isn't being upheld.
Listen, it's a little bit tricky to talk about an LL case when we know there's a very well-publicized court decision that came down against the right of the men to be, or anybody, to be able to ask for specific seating based on gender sitting next to them. So we know that really, officially, LL is already supposed to not permit this.
Right, so
it
why
also,
is this happening?
Wait, hang on. It also strikes me that the reason this was such a terrible delay, because the man refused to give in on his, what he feels is, I don't know if he thinks it's a religious right. I don't know if he thinks it's a right. I think he feels it's a religious need. So let's assume. I don't think it has to be that it's a matter of a legal right. But what it tells me also is that for more than an hour, nobody was willing to switch with him, which means that everybody is standing up exactly as you might want them to, Shoshana. And say, no, this is not acceptable in these terms. So the problem is, of course, then the flight is delayed. And perhaps we could cast aspersions on the involvement or lack thereof of the flight attendants and why, or the captain or whoever is supposed to get involved and say, yo, man, sit down or get off the plane.
Right.
But in the meantime, everything of this actual case, on the case of LL, seems to be what we would have wanted to see happen in terms of preventing gender segregation on an airplane.
So the interesting is that they have some sort of protocol of what, you know, after this lawsuit saying that this is illegal, And this is still happening. I wonder if there is some sort of protocol that Al-Ala is supposed to follow that they've built, you know, that they drew up because of the court case and what to do. Because clearly, either A, they don't have protocol and they need one, or B, they have a protocol and they're not following it.
Right. So I think this is, it's interesting what you say, Anne. I don't agree necessarily that everyone did what they should have done. I think that they should have said, sit down or get out.
I agree that the Al-Ala didn't do what they were supposed to
do. You're saying that people didn't move.
Okay. The people that we're trying to encourage to take a stand against sex segregation, they did. Or they didn't want to move their window seat or whatever the rationale was. They didn't do it.
If he said, I don't want to sit next to a black lady or a black man for that matter, do you think it would have gone down the same way and people would have just sat there for an hour and 15 minutes? Or do you think that guy would have been...
My question is something else. Do we know that they just sat there for an hour and 15 minutes? It means people kept saying no.
No to moving.
No to moving. And if he was insistent that he have some racist views expressed and be catered to, and everybody would have said no, right? And the same way they said no to this.
Or they just didn't want to get involved. I mean, I'm focusing less on what the people around him did and more on, you know, the policy and how we should look at this and maybe, you know, think to prevent it in the future. I think it's a good point you brought up, Shoshana, about if this had been a black person, would we have said, well, it's his, you know, his moral belief that he, you know, he right. that black people are
but none
people
of us
who
is
we shouldn't
that.
Sit next to. And it's for his own, religious or moral well-being. He doesn't want to do this. Would we tolerate that same amount of prejudice because, you know.
But in this Al-Ala case, nobody... Amongst us and amongst the
eventually
court that,
women
that made
moved.
It.
Eventually two women moved. That's how they got the flight moving an hour, out of an
said,
hour
the
and 15
hell
minutes.
This. We have to go.
Yeah, yeah. But so I'm saying. It,
but why
I'm
does it
the
fall
conclusion
on the women
wasn't,
to concede to their
right, the conclusion
own,
wasn't
you know,
the guy sat his pushed down in the seat.
We all agree that Al-Ala did not do what they should have done in this case. Once yes. we agree that Al-Ala did not take charge in the way that they should have taken charge.
See, this is where you and I part ways. Because you... understandably this you know you're like well Al-Ala did what it's supposed to do and I
no, so the complaint is to Al-Ala and they need to beef up their system, they need a protocol, they need to act on the protocol.
I agree.
Whatever it is,
but there's also
but to say as if we think that this is acceptable, you're both presenting it as if we think this is acceptable.
I think that definitely in general society that it is not as understood in the same clear-cut way it is understood about racism or other forms of prejudice, that prejudice against women and discrimination against women.
Even
is,
within religious framing.
Especially because it is given religious justification, then we give religious privilege to this idea. Even though I think it's, you know, this is a distinction for a different time of religious privilege versus religious liberty.
I probably can get on board with your generalization here, but not with regard to the Al-Ala case where there already was a court distinction and you know, a few years ago, we would have had this conversation would be very, very different because Al-Ala would have been in that wishy-washy, murky land. Here we know there's a ruling. They didn't uphold it. It's a problem. And there were consequences in all kinds of ripple effects, which were bad. But we know that. Let's take it to the
so
issue instead of to
separate,
the case.
Yeah, to separate the legal questions because that is a bit more cut and dry. But when you talk about the social aspect of how people relate to this issue, like we will see on Facebook or Twitter, all these comments of people saying, well, you know, this is his belief, this is your belief, and who's
right.
one, you
there's
know,
a lot more
say,
tolerance.
You know,
of this.
There's a lot more tolerance of this kind of injustice because I think we as a society are not clear on where we stand on this. And that's why conversations like the ones we're having now,
yes.
hopefully we'll
Agreed.
Try to clarify and you know, even if it sounds like we're being nitpicky, it's important
that
we're being nitpicky because it helps us clarify and be more precise about why this is wrong or
exactly.
where the gray areas are so we can
Which
tackle them
not
and
about the case.
Narrow them down.
So I'm being nitpicky that it's not about this case and it's about the issue. Because this case was a blow up. It was the wrong thing. It just was wrong. Everybody agrees it was wrong. Let's go talk about the issue.
I do think that there's an aspect of the case that deals with the social acceptance, as Rachel was saying, of asking women to move. Because if everybody on that plane got up and screamed, who do you think you are? What are you doing? Sit down or get off the plane. It would have been a completely different environment. And Al-Ala might Dafka have said, if you don't sit down, we have to kick you out because you're making a security instance. I do think the more resistance you give an idea, the less accepted it becomes and the fewer issues you have. I'm going to bring it back to this event. A lot of people are saying to me, why are you against this? You know, it's a Chabad. If they can have the Pride Parade, why can't they have a Chabad Mashiach gathering with segregated seating? I want to make it clear. I am not coming at this from a vacuum. Okay. I come at this from years of understanding where this policy goes and how segregating women from events that have literally, I mean, again, you know, everybody knows, I live in Beit Shemesh. There was a area, a city event, opening up of a new health clinic. They put the men in the front and the women in the back. It was the opening of a health clinic, and they put one or two women city council members in the back of the room. That is not acceptable. And yet when we say, oh, it's cultural sensitivity, allow them to this. No, 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 and no. I'm sorry. You cannot decide that an opening of a health clinic or a concert that the women have to be shunted aside. I absolutely and completely, and apparently I'm really sharpening my own opinions right now, because it's making me so angry that I have people who I respect tremendously who are saying to me, Shoshana, you can't lump it all together. Where's the nuance? Ba-ba-ba. I mean, I am Queen Captain Nuance as much as I can be, honestly, but I really cannot accept this. I find this so utterly unacceptable, and it's painful to me, painful, that I have friends who are saying to me, you know, I'm sorry, I think you're wrong here. Or listen, I don't care if you think I'm wrong, but at least hear what I'm saying. Hear that I'm saying to you, it is all connected. When women are not put in magazines, when women are put on the side, when they're not given a voice, when they're not represented, it is all connected, and it all becomes part of this larger phenomenon of women can be put to the side. And I'm saying it is not acceptable.
When we were talking about bringing this up as a podcast idea, and my first reaction was, but isn't this repetitive? Don't we talk about this all the time? And it's true, because this is the same problem that is creeping up in all these different areas. When we talked about universities without women, or we talked about the you know, the areas of sidewalks without women, or in Beit Shemesh with the signs, and now on the El Al plane, or in Tel Aviv in Kikar Rabin, that all of these things are... It really boggles my mind how this is the same problem in just different iterations, or even the same iterations in different places. And why, I just don't understand. I don't understand why this is so hard for people to realize that it's wrong, especially when you have the legal aspect involved as well. I mean, I would go even further than what you were saying, because we were saying, you know, you see the effects of it and you see how damaging it is, and that kind of underscores for you why it's wrong. And I think I would go even further that even if it didn't have harmful effects, even if you had a policy that was wrong and unjust, or a practice that was wrong and unjust, and it didn't have harmful results, that wouldn't be the reason why it would be bad. The fact that in its essence, it is something that is wrong and unjust is enough to make it pasul, is enough to make it, you know, to disqualify it for me as a legitimate, valid stance.
So let me ask a different question, because I don't truly disagree with this, but I want to take it further and see how far we get with it, right? What happens when, because this happens often, where women want a women's only space. They want a women's only space for a performance, for singing because of a religious concern about Kol Isha. They want it because they're not comfortable to speak publicly in front of men. There's women shiurim, not where I'm not talking about where the instructor won't have a co-ed audience, but where the women in the audience specifically want, in the class themselves specifically want a women's
only
setting.
Women in the audience or the women performing?
I'm saying there's a whole range of settings where women ask for women's only space,
okay.
Whether it's a performance or a shiur or all kinds of gatherings. Mm-hmm. We know that research shows that even if boys often do better in a co-ed setting, girls often do better in terms of academic achievement in a single-sex setting. Then I heard that those results have been caused and have been called into question. So there's a whole bunch of, like, whether it's really been debunked, there's so many other variables. So I don't really want to get into the education question. I'm simply asking, when women come forward and say that they want a women's only space, do you accept that? Do you not accept that? Do you agree, Rachel Shoshana? Meaning, right? Like, I feel it's the flip side of the potential for chauvinism against women. What happens when the women select it for themselves?
So I think that, to maybe simplify this, because it's very hard to talk about it when you think of the real world example, I think if you abstract it a little bit, it might help. If you bring it just to a legal perspective, and would you say, is it okay to discriminate or segregate if the people want it themselves? Does that make it okay? You know, when you put it that way, then the answer is obviously no. Like, kind of like people who say...
I don't know if everybody would agree that the answer is obviously no.
I mean, there are people who say, you know, Black people liked slavery. They were so happy. If they want to be slaves, why don't we let them?
One second. You know, don't take it beyond its own logical conclusion, right? You're talking about what happens if people who were discriminated against want to then have a...
Want to uphold that discrimination doesn't make it valid.
Hang on. Want to then have a club in which they feel comfortable to share and air their discomfort with the rest.
So we're saying women-only spaces versus spaces that is imposed by outside rules for society saying, women, you have to be segregated. Is that what your distinction is?
I mean,
like, for example, me and Shoshana went to this kennis recently It was basically empowering women who want to become candidates for political positions. And that it wasn't a women only space because there were men there, but it was basically intended for women to be there. Or there are other areas where, you know, like affirmative action, where UDAFCA say this.
I'm not talking about affirmative action. You want to remove it from the real world examples. And I'm saying the real world examples are the real thing. What happens when people, women, are uncomfortable and they express their discomfort and they don't want to participate?
So that's their choice. Doesn't it then come down to choice? Meaning, like, again, and this is what I said, I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast, but in terms of the Chabad thing, I'm fine if there is a section for people who want to sit separately and it's optional. I'm not making the decision.
If someone sits down next to another man instead of sitting down next to a woman, that is their individual choice.
And if the women choose to sit behind a machitza, that's their choice.
Somebody has to be willing for there to be a machitza that will enable the women to
dance
behind
a machitza.
I'm
fine with a section of segregated seating, an optional section of segregated seating. The poster that I saw about this event said there would be special seats for the women. The posters had four, obviously they were all men on the poster. It was all male performances and it was Mashiach Adonenu, like Mashiach, whatever. And then it said special seating for women. That is already drawing a distinction, a segregation, a separation.
What that tells me, rightly or wrongly, what that tells me is that it was an event for the men and the women were allowed to be audience.
And what is not an event for the men where the women are allowed to be
One
the
second.
Audience? That's how I feel life is here now.
So my question is there no room in the world for there to be a men's event where women are allowed to be an audience? I'm not saying all society should be that. This is different from the university campus. This is different from the
shul. But
this
isn't a public space. I think that's the main distinction here, is that you can't impose these kind of this kind of discrimination in a public area.
Okay, so we went through the fact, right? They got a permit. There was a rejection of the permit. There was an upholding of the permit. Let's leave aside the fact that it happened to be in an outdoor space,
public
right?
space. I mean, legally, they mean different things,
right?
But legally, they got a permit.
It's not an outdoor stadium. It's an outdoor thoroughfare.
Right. But they got a permit to be there. Yes, so let's say, for example, the exact same men's event with special seating for women were in an indoor space that you have to actually go through a door to get into. Would that be not acceptable?
Not indoor, outdoor, but private versus public.
Right. Where do you call it public when you need a permit to be allowed to be there to begin with?
I mean, Kikar Rabin is a public area, and that's why they needed a permit from the area to do it.
Right. They didn't rent out the space. They just got a permit
to
be
pay.
There. They pay for a permit, but they don't rent. Not like renting a stadium. Like
when you rent a stadium, it doesn't turn it into a private space.
Right? What's your distinction between a private and a public space then?
That discrimination is illegal in public spaces.
Okay, and this court that upheld the permit clearly does not think that this circumstance violated a law.
Right, and
maybe they just wanted not to be involved, but
a problem that I see often with Israeli courts, where because of the social environment that we talked about, that for them the path of least resistance is to not deal with things that involve religious sentiment, because it is a very touchy subject and they don't want to mess with things. And so we see this at the Kotel, we see this with so many other things, where the court will rule in a way that is really not so legally sound. And they will say, you know what, this is too big of a deal, I don't want to touch it. You know, and then what we're seeing, that because of more and more lawsuits that have been being brought, this is slowly changing. And the courts are more willing to stand up in certain instances, and certain instances they're not. But that doesn't mean that it is okay, because in the end of the day, the court gave this ruling allowing discrimination.
But when you say the court is making the wrong call, yes. Right? Which is fundamentally what you're saying. When you say that the court is making the wrong call, you are establishing yourself as the arbiter of what should be legal and illegal, what's public, what's private, where we draw these lines. I agree that discrimination is a problem.
I think it's a big problem in Israel.
Disputing
what's public and private. I think that a lot of people are using the courts as a way to, instead of saying, is this constitutional or not? They use the court as a kind of proxy war of, I'm going to have my cultural or religious or moral values being validated by a court. And then they'll tell me that I am right, or that this religion is okay and this religion is not okay. And that's something that happens a lot in Israel and is wrong.
I think that there are many aspects of this issue that we really need to hash out. And some of them will come into public-private. Some of them will come into, optional or enforced. Two points I want to make before wrapping up, because we've had quite a discussion. One is, someone made the point to me, said, Shoshana, why don't you try to go and make a mixed gender event in Kfar Chabad or in Bnei Brak and see how that goes, and see if they uphold your right to have your way of a mixed event in a religious area. Number one, I have no interest in doing that. But number two, I'll tell you that the city of Bnei Brak doesn't allow us to put up our breast cancer posters because it's immodest to talk about women.
Informational signs about getting tested.
Yes, informational signs about getting screened for breast cancer that we do every year in our campaign. The city of Bnei Brak said it's immodest to talk about women's health in the street, even though we only say mammogram and save your life. We don't say anything immodest.
Not saying the B word.
Not saying the B word. That's number one, that cities are and do make determinations of what they will allow in their public spaces or not in their public spaces.
Right, which doesn't mean that they are necessarily justified in doing it.
Correct. Yeah. Listen, this is a very dynamic issue. And Israel in general is both a Jewish and a democratic state. And that is the core of many of the issues that we discuss. How do we balance those value systems when we care about both of those value systems? And where does one end and one begin? It's a great discussion. It's a great conflict that we don't necessarily have answers to all the time. But this is what I'm saying, is that we need to talk about these things. And I want to say to the people who are arguing with us, please consider what we're saying in the larger context, and not just this event or that event, but pull back a little bit and understand what's happening here. When you talk about the acceptance of and the pervasive phenomenon of removing women from the public sphere, whether it's visibly, whether it's in representation, whether it's putting them to the side, this has serious and significant consequences. And this is what Chochmat Nashim talks about all the time. And these conversations have to be had, even if you're arguing with friends. Just listen to one another and hear what each other is saying.
You can find us on our Facebook page, Chochmat Nashim, C-H-O-C-H-M-A-T-N-A-S-H-I-M. Please tell us what you think about this issue. It's heated. We're interested.
And if you like this podcast, or if you didn't like the podcast, come and leave us a comment on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate us and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you hear your information.
Can you hear us now?